Hi, welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman, and Lauren Cox of the Locked On Bears podcast. That's right, it's a crossover episode.
Crossover!
Better crossover than Allen Iverson, I would say. Anyways, now we got a special episode. The Seahawks play the Bears on Monday Night Football, and we decided to get together and record a show for you guys so you can get a little bit of perspective from the Bears side of things. Lauren, thanks for getting on the show.
Hey, I don't know if this is going to be better than Allen Iverson, but we didn't practice first, and we're not talking about practice here, so it'll be pretty good.
Not a game. Practice.
You're never going to talk about practice here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. Not once. But we are going to talk Bears, and I want to talk first. Let's talk Bears defense first. How does that sound?
Great.
You guys just made a pretty big acquisition in Khalil Mack. And with Roquan Smith, when they were on the field against the Packers, they looked like the sort of pass rushing difference makers who were going to ruin Russell Wilson's life. But they were also on a bit of a tight pitch count. How are you feeling about how much those two are going to play? And what sort of impact do you think they're going to have against the Seahawks on Monday?
So Khalil Mack's pitch count is dwindling, and actually not dwindling, but I guess it's fading away, as in he may be ready for a full game next week. And their defensive coordinator specifically said he hates the term pitch count, but that's okay. He doesn't listen to my show and he doesn't listen to your show, so we can use it as much as we want.
You don't
he
know
played
that.
Like that's that's true. Actually, that's very true. I should address him by name more often. But Vic Fangio. No, Khalil Mack played about two-thirds of the snap last week and probably could go a little bit more, but what Green Bay did to neutralize him in the second half was go into a no-huddle and a lot of up-tempo stuff, and the Bears offensively went into a couple three-and-outs in a row, which just didn't give the defense much time. So, you know, I think if Mack had had more rest in between drives and stuff, he may have played closer to the whole game. So I would expect to see a lot of Khalil Mack. But Roquan Smith is a different story. He might not have played at all if Danny Trevathan hadn't gotten hurt at some point in the game, and then Trevathan ended up coming back, and Mack played a few snaps, but then Smith played a few snaps, excuse me. But in total, Smith played 8 plays out of 60. So I think you're going to see that increase a little bit more. And, you know, some of these nickel package and dime situations where they can, you know, kind of rely on him in coverage more than run defense. They also had him rush the passer last week, but all 8 of the plays he was on the field for were passes. So I think they're going to be slowly but surely with him, and you're still going to see a lot of Danny Trevathan and Nick Kwiatkowski on the inside.
Okay. So in terms of the impact that Mack has then, in terms of running Fangio stuff, obviously we in Seattle have seen a lot of Fangio through the years from his time in San Francisco. How is he implicating himself, for lack of a better term, in the scheme? What is he bringing to the table, and how scared should we be?
So, you know, I meant to ask you before we started this podcast, how do you pronounce the right tackle of the Seattle Seahawks?
Jermaine Ifedi.
Ifedi. I would not have said Ifedi right. So,
I pronounce it with a couple swear words peppered in, but that's neither here nor there.
So, Khalil Mack, in his debut, rushed entirely from the left side of the defense or the right side of the offense. He pretty much was just in that same spot for 42 snaps of the game. And that's fine. He had, I think, the 4th most pressures of any edge rusher last week. He had more total pressures than the Oakland Raiders defense did as a whole last week, because, I mean, they were terrible. But
probably the Seahawks, too.
The Seahawks were close. I think they had 6 or 7, and Mack had 6. So it was right up. But, yeah, Khalil, he ripped the ball out of Deshaun Kizer's hands for a forced fumble and then stood in the right spot on a screen pass for a pick 6. And really, Brian Bulaga had quite a bit of trouble with him. So I'm imagining Jermaine Ifedi or Ifedi?
Ifedi.
Ifedi. I'm imagining Jermaine Ifedi is going to have a lot of trouble with him. And really, from a scheme standpoint, they've just been kind of moving everybody else around and letting Khalil Mack stay in his one spot. Occasionally, they'll put Leonard Floyd on the same side. But for the most part, last week, we saw him drop in coverage whenever they lined up on that same edge. But, you know, moving to different 3-3-5 nickel packages and some a little bit of dime here and there, and just kind of sending different pass rushers in different areas. But every time Khalil Mack, he's on the left side of that defense, right side of the offense.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm terrified.
Yeah, Jermaine Ifedi has obviously been a weak link league-wide at the right tackle position, so that's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, I agree. I see, Jermaine Ifedi's had struggles against just regular run-of-the-mill pass rushers and had struggles in pre-snap penalties and post-snap penalties, so him lining up against Khalil Mack is going to be an entirely different issue, especially a week after lining up against Von Miller. I had my mind on the offensive side of the ball, and after watching the first game of Mitch Trubisky, how do you think he can fare against the Seahawks defense, who is down a handful of Pro Bowlers from years past?
So, I mean, I've grown to really dislike the now cliche a tale of two halves. So I'm not gonna describe Trubisky's performance that way, but he had a very strong first quarter when he was confident. He was firing. He was moving the ball very effectively against his Packers defense, especially in sort of the scripted plays segment of the game when they kind of know exactly what they're going to do, and you know that everything's clicking well, and that's how they went up 20-0 on Green Bay. But you get into that even in the second quarter, but especially the second half, Trubisky was feeling ghosts a lot in the pocket. I mean, even on a three-man rush, he'd take off and scramble when there's no pressure there. And they, you know, even in the fourth quarter, they started to limit some of his reads a little bit, and a lot of kind of one read where two receivers are running routes and he's got to pick one of them, and just kind of trying to take some of the pressure off of him. And he largely folded down the stretch in that sense, which was disappointing. But early on, we saw a lot of positive developments. We saw a guy who was effectively using his legs to extend plays and find receivers. He was hitting some tight windows. He was really feeling it across the field. And, you know, largely the Bears playmakers didn't make a ton of plays early on. It was a lot of Trubisky. So there's some real question mark as to, you know, how not only Trubisky will respond, but also the head coach, Matt Nagy, the play caller. There were some questionable decisions in that third and fourth quarter last week, and I think everyone's kind of looking to see, okay, let's see how well they put it together for four quarters. And not playing Aaron Rodgers and playing a potentially worse Seahawks defense might be enough to kind of bring everything together.
Yeah, speaking of that, one last question before we take a quick break. The Seahawks pass rush is not great, and I'm wondering if the Green Bay pass rush was particularly impactful last week in terms of sending Trubisky down on that second half spiral in your mind, or if you think it was just maybe the pressure of the moment or something along those lines. Because when I think about what Seattle can do on the pass rush against him, I'm worried. I'm worried we're not going to get there. We don't have the depth. We don't have the horses.
So largely, I didn't think the Packers pass rush was, you know, critical. I think PFF had Trubisky under pressure from a defensive player on 11 out of 42 or 43 dropbacks, so around 25%, which is maybe a little bit slightly even below league average with more of a clean pocket. But Trubisky was sacked four times in that game, and really, in some sense, all four of those sacks were his fault. That it's him scrambling out of the pocket too early and being tackled short of the line of scrimmage, or it's him running into the arms of a defender and neutralizing the actual leverage of his blockers. I mean, there were a few times when, you know, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry were able to beat the Bears offensive linemen, but as a whole, I don't think any of the individual offensive linemen allowed more than two pressures, but no one had zero, so everyone was at like one or two hurries in the game, and everything else was on Mitch Trubisky. So, you know, I think throwing different looks at him can get in his head. Mike Pettine does some of that with overloading one side of the line of scrimmage, and even when it doesn't get to Trubisky, it just gets him thinking and maybe gets him worried about what's happening on that side of the field. But largely, it was a lot of self-inflicted pressure, and I don't know how much the spotlight happens on, you know, prime time, another game here against the Seahawks, and, you know, everyone's going to be watching it, and especially if things start to go sour, I wonder if where or what his composure might end up being. But I think he struggles much more under pressure, and if the Seahawks can get it, that's huge to stopping Mitch, but they don't necessarily have to be terrorizing him all game to get him to make mistakes.
All right, well, that's hopeful, right, Grant?
Yeah, I think that, especially too with a younger quarterback still dealing with, not issues, but, you know, having growing pains and learning from different moments. You know, there's going to be specific moments where the Seahawks can take advantage of a young, unexperienced quarterback, but at the same time, Trubisky can take advantage of a weak, or a typically weak, Seahawks pass rush and be able to evade some sacks with his legs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be a matchup where the question is, what matters more, the quality of the guys in the interior of the Seahawks defense versus the lack of quality up front. But all right, we're going to take a quick break with this Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Bears crossover episode. I'll be back right after this. I want to talk some big matchups in this game in terms of skill position guys on both sides of the ball with Lawrence. We'll be back right after this, Locked On Seahawks.
Locked On Seahawks fans, if you find yourself wanting to bet on any sports game online, whether it be the Seahawks or any other team, our suggestion is that you go to mybookie.ag. They have quick, fast payouts, a great interface to use, whether it's desktop or mobile, and if you go use the promo code LOCKEDON, you can get 100% back on your first deposit. So make sure you go take advantage of our promo code. It's LOCKEDON at mybookie.ag. We are back with the Locked On Seahawks podcast. It's a Locked On Seahawks, Locked On Bears crossover. You're still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and also Lauren Cox of the Locked On Bears podcast. And you know, when we talk about matchups for this game, Seahawks versus Bears, Monday Night Football on ESPN, you know, something that stands out to me is it goes to the Bears skill positions, and specifically the running backs, Jordan Howard and Tarik Cohen, and how the Seahawks can possibly combat the two with their linebackers in Bobby Wagner, Shaquem Griffin, because it looks like KJ Wright's going to be out, and Barkevious Mingo. And so I ask you, Lauren, you know, if the Seahawks are going to have any success in stopping this Bears rushing attack, what's it going to be stemming from?
So it's interesting because, like, last week Green Bay didn't have much success stopping the Bears rushing attack, but the Bears kind of got away with it down the stretch. And in terms of Jordan Howard, I mean, he dealt with loaded boxes all last year. 7-8 guys in there. The defenses didn't respect the Bears as a passing offense. And, you know, it wasn't that he still dominated in spite, but he still had a 1,000-yard season and was one of the top 10 rushers in the NFL and still had a pretty healthy yards per carry average over the course of the season. So, you know, there's not a lot. You know, you don't see a lot of games where Jordan Howard is really stopped. It's just a matter of, like, how well you stop him and how well the Bears are able to take advantage of that. I mean, I think his performances ultimately kind of ebb and flow with the success of the offense and with the passing game. And, you know, it's about being disciplined. It's about actually wrapping up when you get to him because he creates a lot of yards after contact. And you have to be able to keep guys in the box. And the Bears are going to try and stretch you out horizontally. They're going to send a lot of pre-snap motion to get guys out of the box and to get different matchups for different wide receivers. And you know, last week they moved their left tackle and had him line up at wide receiver for two different plays in the first quarter. They're doing a lot of different things here. And, you know, you can stop Jordan Howard. They run a lot of zone, and you know, he's very good at kind of reading it and feeling it. So guys just have to be disciplined in maintaining their gaps. And anytime they get sloppy, he does a very good job of taking advantage.
All right, yeah, because I was just going to finish out this thought that the Seahawks, their tackling was not very good against the Broncos. Now you can attribute that to, you know, the hot field, the hot weather, and the lack of, you know, air they had in the high altitude. But they just looked super sloppy in tackling, and ultimately that's what the two long touchdowns stemmed from. There were Case Keenum passes, but they were largely due to yards after the catch. And so, you know, that's where my worry comes from, the Bears stretching them out horizontally, throwing these pitch plays and splitting guys out wide and getting specific matchups. And so that's where my worry comes from when it comes to the Seahawks tackling these two running backs.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a risk. And also talking about guys who are multi-dimensional weapons, Trey Burton didn't really do a ton against Green Bay, but obviously he is a big acquisition for you guys this year. He has a lot of versatility in his game. What has he brought in the preseason? What did you see in training camp? And what do you think he can bring to you guys this year? How is he a matchup nightmare potentially for the Seahawks team?
Yeah, last week was interesting for him because, yeah, I think he had, what, one catch in the game for a few yards. And I think he had another play that was nullified by a penalty. So, I mean, there was some more there. But I saw a guy on tape that was open quite a bit. And, you know, it's Trubisky bailing from the pocket early and not seeing him. Or, you know, Trubisky's just looking to one side of the field and Burton's on the other side. And he makes a move and beats his guy. But just for whatever reason, the ball didn't make it its way to Trey Burton. And in the preseason, we saw a pretty strong connection between those two. I want to say Burton was Trubisky's most targeted receiver during the preseason, and I think they're going to get there eventually. You know, the Packers play a lot of dime and even like quarter defense with seven defensive backs in, so you know, I think they were intentionally kind of loading up the middle of the field and trying to force Trubisky to throw outside, because Trubisky tends to do better on in-breaking routes when he can kind of, you know, attack the middle of the field. He also very much favors the right side of the field versus the left. You hardly ever see him throw left outside the numbers. So, you know, the middle of the field is where Trey Burton's going to be working from a lot, whether it's the slot, whether it's the wing. He lined up at left tackle a few times on some over formations where they put the left tackle outside of the right tackle and, you know, just to throw some different looks at the offense. So you're going to see Trey Burton everywhere. You're going to see them try and get some one-on-one matchups for him. And the key is to just, you know, will Mitch Trubisky find him? And will he be able to deliver the on-target ball? If Trubisky has time to throw, the Bears' offense is moving pretty effectively, and you don't have this specter of Aaron Rodgers, or, you know, if Russell Wilson's pulling some big comeback off, and I think you start to see the pressure get to Trubisky. But if things go smoothly, I think you'll see a lot more Trey Burton involved this week than we did last week.
That's interesting. And also, I don't know if you were able to watch the Seahawks game, but we had a pretty great debut from our rookie tight end, Will Disley, sort of out of nowhere. We expected him to come in and fill that Zach Miller blocking and occasional, like, sort of outlet role, but he was, you know, he was catching explosives, almost had a second touchdown, ended up racking up over 100 yards receiving. How have the Bears been defending tight ends? We know the Broncos aren't great at that. How are the Bears at it? Can we expect another big week for Will Disley, or is Will Disley going to fall back to earth?
Yeah, I'm writing up a little look at Will Disley over at Bears Wire, kind of talking about him emerging as a Seahawks weapon and how they can potentially defend him. And last week, the Bears seem to put a pretty clear focus on trying to shut down Jimmy Graham, a former Seattle Seahawk himself, and they were largely effective at that. I want to say Graham finished with, what, two catches for 8 yards in the game, and one of them was for seven. So, you know, it kind of tells you what his game was like. And for Graham, they were jamming him at the line of scrimmage and just kind of, you know, keeping a really close eye on him. And ultimately, they took a little bit less attention on other receivers, and it kind of hurt them. But I'm expecting something similar. I mean, I don't think they're going to put nearly as much of an emphasis on Disley, but from what I could see, you know, Disley's quick, and he's got some good hands, and he's hard to bring down after the catch. But when the Broncos linebackers were getting physical with him, particularly off the line of scrimmage, he's not a guy that can run sharp routes yet. I mean, rookie fourth-round pick, you can't expect that from him. And so I wonder how well he's going to be able to create separation when he's not able to get a free release and really utilize some of the speed that he showed. So if I'm the Bears, that's my strategy. And last week they had some pretty good success defending tight ends, getting a little bit more physical with Jimmy Graham. So I don't know. I fear the play action where Disley stays in the block and then goes out on the release, because I think the Bears struggled with running backs doing that last week, with Ty Montgomery being open a few times after going on a late release on his route. So that's kind of where I'm worried about Disley. But overall, I think the Bears will fare better than the Broncos, who have historically struggled with running backs and tight ends.
You break my heart. I wanted another hundo from Disley, but I'll take another 75 from Chris Carson if that's what it's got to be. If that's what it's got to be. All right, let's take another quick break. We'll be back right after this. Let's pick this game. Let's decide who wins in the epic 0-1 matchup. Essentially, I think this is a play-in game for who gets to be the eighth best team in the NFC. We'll be back right after this. Locked On Bears, Locked On Seahawks, crossing it over on the Locked On Podcast Network.
And we're back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We are still crossing it over with Locked On Bears. and Lauren Cox. So, you know, this is the moment of truth. We have to pick this Monday Night Football matchup between our Seahawks, your Bears. Who's going to win? I think that this is going to be a tough game for both teams. It has the potential to get ugly and get kind of sloppy and just be a super rough game to watch on the eyes. So I'm going to throw it to you first, Lauren. Who do you think is going to win this game?
So I pride myself on, you know, remaining objective and analyzing this team from the outside. And so I always like hesitate to pick the Bears when I'm talking to other people about their team, because I think you know, these two teams are similar levels of talent. They both have some really key strong players at some positions, and other positions where you're not so sure how well they can hold up. And so I don't think one team is much better than the other, but I do think the matchups favor the Bears fairly significantly, with Khalil Mack and some this emergence of the Bears pass rush against their offensive line, the lack of Seahawks pass rush going against Trubisky, who can kind of eat and get confident when he's got that clean pocket and when the offense is clicking. And you know, if Jordan Howard can get the running game going a little bit, I don't know how much this Seahawks defense is going to be able to keep up with some of the things the Bears did last week. And offensively, you know, especially with Doug Baldwin hurt now, it's what Brandon Marshall and Tyler Lockett and Will Disley, they don't scare me as much as other teams' playmakers. So I just find that from a matchup standpoint that the Bears have the advantage here. And so if I had to put a score to it, I think it's going to be close, you know, like a 24-20 type final. And, you know, neither team I don't think could pull away from the other one. But I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be a fun game. But I just lean Chicago from a matchup standpoint.
All right, I'll pick this. I think that the one factor we haven't talked about, and I can't believe it hasn't come up yet, is Michael Dixon. Seahawks wonder. We all know Michael Dixon. Come on. I think that if the Seahawks win, it's because they hit on their explosives. They find a way to buy Russell Wilson time by moving the pocket around, keeping him away from Khalil Mack, winning the field position battle, forcing Trubisky to go long fields, and doing enough in the run game on the defensive side of the ball. Jaron Reed had a bunch of tackles last week. He didn't like pop off the screen, but he was very impactful on the D-line. I thought the interior of the Seahawks defensive line looked okay till the very end of that game against Denver, when they sort of wore out. And so for me, I think the Seahawks have a shot in this, but I with 3.5 points, if I were on my bookie, I think I would take the points for the Seahawks. I think I would take the points for the Seahawks. Picking the game straight up, I'm going to go another heartbreaking, nail-biting Seahawks loss. I think I'm going to go 27-26. That's a little high. Maybe 24-23. Seahawks lose because they missed an extra point.
This is the only way it can happen now. Yeah, and it's going to be a case where the missed extra point comes fairly early on in the game, and the Seahawks have to drive downfield, and they get just so close, they just get stopped right outside of field goal range, and that extra point just looms large. No, but
has Seabass ever missed an extra point or just getting blocked? Because I feel like he's never missed an extra point.
I think it's possible, but he also, he looked bad last year with the Raiders. I'm just not sold on Sebastian Janikowski. And it didn't help that he missed the same field goal twice in Denver.
He just
shouldn't be missing 47-yarders. Anyway, that's a great question as to whether or not he's ever missed an extra point. He might not have. They're longer. 95% of his career was with Chippen. You know, like, come on. You know, we're living in the new era of Janikowski being disappointing. I'm still just shell-shocked from Blair Walsh.
All right, so here's my pick. Please. Okay. If the Seahawks keep Sebastian Janikowski and go into the game with him, they lose probably, I'm going to say 20. I like the 24 for the Bears, and I'll say 17 for the Seahawks.
What?
But if the Seahawks go and sign Dan Bailey and cut Sebastian Janikowski, they win 27-24.
And I just looked it up. Seabass has missed 6 extra points in his 18-year career. So one every 3 years, and he missed one in 2015 and 2016. So you're set this year.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't missed one. He only missed field goals last week. So, you know, it's going to get worse before it gets better with our kicking game. But it's going to be so good with our punting game. I mean, again, just for your sake, you should know. It's going to be – I just feel like Michael Dixon actually only played okay against Denver. He shanked a punt, and he still had the second most net yards per punt in a game where a punter punted at least 4 times in the history of the NFL. And he – so, you know, like I don't – I mean, that's Denver. You know, things happen in Denver. Things happen, especially in September. But the weather's going to be pretty good in Chicago, as I understand it. Is that right? I guess Monday's far away and there's a weird hurricane, so God only knows. But the early forecast was decent. I don't know. I think Michael Dixon's going to be a factor. But yeah, I'm pessimistic. And I guess Grant is too. All right, so I guess we're going to end this Locked On crossover episode by saying Bears are going to break our hearts just like the Broncos did. That's not great. I don't like that feeling, but it's how we feel. And even if you don't agree, I think you should leave us a 5-star review. You should check out PFF and see the stats that we're seeing. Even though PFF initially graded Michael Dixon as the second best punter, revised that up to be the best punter. They had Earl Thomas as the best safety. They got it all going on. Make sure you're checking out stuff on PFF. Grant, you got anything we should talk about before we sign off?
No, just make sure you're keeping up with all the shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. Locked On NFL has a great lineup of guests, as always. You should definitely check out Locked On Bears and get a little more insight of their team aside from this crossover. And you can follow me on Twitter at Grant Goldberg. You can find Spike on Twitter at Spike Friedman. And where can they find you, Lauren?
At Cox Sports One. It's like Fox Sports One, but with a C.
Oh, boy. That's clever.
No one ever gets it, so it's fine. I always have to explain. They're like, oh, that makes sense. Okay.
I saw it today, and I immediately was like, that you sneaky, sneaky guy. Anyways, you know, thank you guys for listening to the show. And keep an eye out for just more episodes coming this week. And get ready for this Seahawks-Bears game on Monday. So for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.